Welcome back to Phantom Island, presented by Homefield. It's me, Ryan Nanny, and today I'm going to be sitting down with David Cavucci, the founder and proprietor of Foiaball, FOIABALL.com. In just the few months since David launched this site, he's used open records to break stories on how conferences lobby the playoff committee, or the charity UCLA used to funnel NIL donations, and, of course, the rough outlines of the Bill Belichick Hulu documentary that got canceled. It's a very cool project, and we're going to talk about how FOIA works and what David's process has looked like doing this kind of journalism. But before we get to that, a few business items. Number one, this show, like all our Wednesday episodes, is free, but that is very much in large part thanks to our generous paid subscribers who help make every episode of Phantom Island possible. If you would like to join their number, go to phantomisland.show and sign up today. Number two, if you're like, hey man, I'm good on spending money right now. Hey, I get that. Thank you for listening all the same. You can still help us. Growing an independent podcast outside of a big network requires a lot of word of mouth. So leave us a review on your podcast platform of choice. Tell a friend about the show. Give us a link on social media. It all helps. Steven and I really enjoy making something a little different from our past work, and we want more people to hear about it. Number three, if you do want to spend money, but you don't want that money to go to us, which we don't have to get into why, that's just going to hurt my feelings, Homefield remains ready to exchange your dollars for comfortable, cozy, stylish collegiate apparel. We have talked a lot about the number one Indiana football Hoosiers on this show, so I'm not going to talk about the new Rose Bowl collection Homefield just unveiled. I'm not going to walk you through my thoughts about which hat from that collection I want to wear to the game, and whether it goes best with the shirt with the cartoon bison mascot holding a giant rose, or the one with the more photorealistic bison with a rose in its mouth. I'm just not talking about those things, so pick another school at homefieldapparel.com, because I'm not talking about Indiana today. I'm just not. Okay, let's talk to Dave.
Every rustle in the trees, a potential snare. Close my eyes and block my ears.
David Cavucci, welcome to Phantom Island. I have the least important question that I want to lead off this discussion with. FOIA, the acronym. I have heard this pronounced multiple ways by multiple people. I know how I pronounce it. I know I've heard other people pronounce it in different ways. It's important for me to know, in part because it forms, you know, the basis of your site, the name of your site. How do you pronounce that word, that acronym?
So this is wild. I've been doing public records reporting for almost a decade, and I've only ever heard it pronounced one way. So now I'm like, can I throw it back to you? Like, how are other people pronouncing this? I mean, yeah, I guess I should get my name out there. So it is FOIA Ball, F-O-I-A-B-A-L-L, but FOIA.
FOIA, like, rhymes with Goya, the yes. Black bean company or something. Okay, great. Yes. That's how I pronounce it as well. The other two ways I have heard people say it, I've heard FOIWA, with a sort of like W. I'm not here to judge. I'm just telling you whatever. I've heard FOIWA. And I've also heard people who only refer to it by its initials. They don't say FOIA. They say F-O-I-A.
I hate that. Well, you know, when I launched this business, my wife told me she'd never heard of FOIA. And I was like, that's funny because we talk about it all the time. I tell you what I was doing during my workday. It is fascinating who knows about it, who doesn't, how they've seen it. So she thought it was a terrible name and still kind of does, but I stand by it.
It's tricky because all right, so for those who don't know, for a listener who's coming in totally, totally cold, FOIA stands for Freedom of Information Act. Is FOIA a like law you can go find somewhere federally? Not really. Like there is a federal version. Every state has its version. Number one, they're not all called the same thing. They frequently have different names and different sort of like appellations attached to them. So FOIA, I think in the way that you and I use it, is more of a catch-all term, not necessarily. It's not the same way you would talk about like NASA. NASA means one specific thing. It doesn't just mean like any space agency, really.
Well, you know, ESA or the local, you know, state space agency.
That's like, right. You know, that's right. Arkansas Space.
Yeah. Local one for Arkansas SpaceX. So Back in the 1950s, this is wild. I actually didn't know this until I started this site. I always assumed FOIA was like response to all the sort of like crazy CIA assassination campaigns that, you know, maybe or maybe didn't happen, and they demanded government open records. But it really happened a decade before with one U.S. congressman who was just really mad at the Department of Defense for overclassifying stuff. And he spent 10 years trying to get this law passed, eventually did. And now every state has to give me how much college teams spent on balloons when I just sort of politely ask them. So it's a fascinating thing. But yeah, there's a federal law and then it trickles down to states. There's Florida has sunshine laws. Missouri is also called sunshine, which I think is kind of dubious. Like there's no sunshine in Missouri. You know, public records acts, data retention acts, all sorts of stuff. But every state has it and every state does it slightly differently.
So one, let's talk about some of the differences that you and other people encounter. Matt Brown, our mutual on Blue Sky and other places. He does a ton of great FOIA work. Other people, like journalists of all stripe, rely on FOIA at different points. Maybe not as forward as you do with FOIA Ball, but what are sort of the challenges that you face as somebody who's working through open records laws when you're trying to cast a wide net? Yeah.
Just like a shout out, Matt Brown is a fantastic, Extra Point's a fantastic site. I'm sure everyone here knows it. And he's been such a nice help and really supportive when I launched this. So it really just speaks just really to his character. He's a really great guy. But, you know, it's really fascinating. Every state, you know, I used to run a public records internship for 8 years. I'd teach college students how to do it. And, you know, the first thing I did when they would come in and like say, I want to FOIA this from the state. And I said, OK, well, read the law, know what you can get. And of course, being in charge, I never read the laws. I was just like, you tell me what you found out. And in doing this much more actively, you know, every state is different. Take something like a coach getting fired. You know, we've had, I believe, a lot of coaches fired this season.
Yes, can't confirm.
And there's, if you send, like, let me see, I sent requests to obviously Virginia Tech at Virginia, Cal at California. I've already lost track. Nothing at Pennsylvania. We can get to that later. But just to use those like two examples, you know, Virginia Tech does not disclose employment records. They will say like, you can't get Brent Pry's performance review. Which is a bummer. Whereas like other schools in certain other states will hand out things like that. Mm-hmm. And then there's all sorts of rules around what's protected. You know, certain deliberative things are, other schools don't care and they'll pass it along. Every single state has its own nuances and vagaries. So I've been really trying to learn all of that. And I forget all the time. Michigan requires you to like fully state your name and address and email every time you submit a request. And I forget every time. And they're just like, hey, you need to submit this. And I'm like, but guys, you know this. So I get very excited when I remember to do that. And I don't have to get yelled at by Wolverine FOIA officers.
So this is where I can say that I have been on the other side of this process. I have also submitted a handful of FOIAs over the course of my life. But in my previous career as an attorney, when I was working for the city of New York, I was for the Department of Investigation for a time. For a great city, yeah. This is under... God, this is under Bloomberg. That's how long ago it was. This was okay. Bloomberg's last term. I was the department's initial FOIA response officer. And what that meant, to give people a sense, is that every FOIA that came to the Department of Investigation, which for everyone else's context at the time was sort of like internal investigations for the city. If you had a complaint about a construction company that the city was working with, or you thought your sanitation worker was trying to scam you, or you had a complaint about voter fraud or this, that, or the other, it came through DOI. And the tricky thing about being a FOIA officer is that you have to respond to every request in some way, shape, or form. And it doesn't matter how insane or bonkers or facially impossible the request is. You do have to give all of them some time, some modicum of effort, and you have to issue a response of some sort. Now, what that means is when you have a conspiracy theorist who writes to your department and is like, hey, I want everything you have on the city's investigation into Mayor Bloomberg's contact with alien civilizations, I can't just write back like, that doesn't exist. I actually have to go look. Like, I have to make a good faith effort to sort of say, do we have any responsive records to this? And then I have to take time out of my workday to sort of write a letter and say, hey, After a search, no responsive records could be found. Blah, 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 blah.
So,
yeah, go ahead.
The number of requests I send out to 4Hives is where I start with, like, I'm so sorry about this. Please tell me, you know, all of Mike Lombardi's bar tabs for the past year. There are ways around it, but one of my favorite things is the Secret Service makes public all their FOIA logs, mm-hmm. and they're just emails like, why are you outside my house right now? So they have to reach out to agents and be like, are we there? You know,
yes.
Was someone there? And a lot of them get rejected, but it's used, and I should note, you don't need to be a journalist to use it. Any citizen can do it. And the way it was written in the 1950s was that you could just go walk into a government department and say, give me this. And It's sort of very weird now with email and databases and all sorts of digital platforms. But, like, theoretically, you don't need to say who you are. You don't need to say why you want it. You can just walk into a government office, track down Ryan, and be like, aliens, where are they?
Yes. And you're correct that in many cases, I don't know if this is true across all states. Obviously, New York is the one where I work most closely. But it's not just sort of a right to information. It's a right to inspect a lot of times. It's the ability to sort of say, like, I want to come down and look at the files that you have on this subject. Now, that said, I think one thing that can kind of get lost in casual conversation about how FOIA works from both sides is that, generally speaking, you are asking not, it's called the Freedom of Information Act. Some places call it the Freedom of Information Law, and you call it FOIL, whatever. We're not going to get lost in
FOIL law. That would have
FOIL ball? It's not too late.
That's harder to say.
You can squat on FOIL ball and just use it as a redirect if
that's
you want.
That's true, yeah.
What you're asking for is, I would say, 95% of the time, you're asking for documents that already exist. Like, you can't write to a FOIA officer like I used to be and said, hey, I want you to make something for me. I want you to give me a document, create a document that reflects this information. What you're really asking for is, what do you already have in your records that is responsive to a question I have? Is that, like, have I accurately stated one of the major sort of contours around, like, how open records laws work?
Absolutely, yes. Knowing what you want to get can be very useful. I had a very not quite Kafka-esque experience with a Virginia Tech FOIA officer that's still ongoing, wherein I have a piece up, I guess, today about balloon spending at schools. And when I initially sent him the request, I said, give me all your spending on balloons. And he said, that doesn't exist. And so, being a, you know, sort of somewhat pissy journalist, I found, was deep into a Facebook rabbit hole, finding the balloon vendor for Virginia Tech who did, like, James Franklin's press conference. Found the company name, then asked for, like, all that. And he gave me the records, you know, just a couple days ago. And I was like, how come you didn't give me this when I asked first time? He's like, well, that didn't exist when you asked the first time. It's like, that's not true at all. You know, unless you just, you're just completely sort of, I don't want to say lying, but basically lying. But yeah, one thing I've been trying to do, and it's been difficult, is, like, I have been trying to find out how precisely coaches and, like, ADs are secretly communicating because they're not using email. So I asked a lot of schools for screenshots of coaches' work phones. Just, like, send me a screenshot so I can see what apps are on it. Like, I want to know, are they on Signal, are they on WhatsApp, stuff like that. And some schools would say yes. They'd be like, okay, we can do that. That's sort of technically a record that exists. Whereas other schools are like, we're not doing that. Like, I'm not going to go to Kirby Smart and say, like, give me your phone and let me take a photo of it. So you can and can't do it, but, like, you sort of, it's a lot of trial and error. Like, you may think something exists and it doesn't. And, you know, you sort of have to use the responses you get to try and further how you send out additional requests.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to one of the other sort of, maybe it's a tip or trick of doing this work, is precision matters. Like, in one sense, you're not trying to be so precise most of the time where you sort of don't get everything you're looking for. But one of the easiest responses you can issue if you are a FOIA response officer, somebody's like, give me every email Kirby Smart has ever sent in the entirety of his time ever at Georgia. You can sort of say, like, that's too broad. That's what you're asking for would require too much time for me to search through and figure out what's privileged, what's not. And either I get to say to you, again, this kind of depends on the state, like, this would require more time than is reasonable, or I get to say, okay, I'll do that. It will cost you $18,000 because that's how much time it would take a state employee to sort of go through and do the work and prepare the records in which that you're asking for. So it's not a, I don't think it's, I guess what I'm getting at is that it's not really shouting into a cave and being like, I demand answer, and answer is spat out back at yeah. you. There are some contours to it, and there are some ways to make it work for you and ways in which you can sort of like stumble pretty badly yeah. when you're trying to do something.
And even when you know what you're doing, you can still get with very high fees. I am still very early in the subscriber newsletter game. So I have not that many paid subscribers, but please do subscribe because the University of Central Florida, South Florida, I'm going to get this horribly wrong. They renamed their stadium Pitbull Stadium, and I asked for like,
oh, that's FIU. That's Florida International.
Okay. Yes. Not even close. Not even any of those schools. You can see how well versed I am in the college football world. I wanted all their board of trustee emails with Pitbull, and they do exist, you know, his management team, all that stuff. And they cited me $56,000 to review and reject them all. So I'm still working on ways to like talk them down. You can always negotiate. It is always a negotiation. But yeah. right now I cannot afford to inform my readers how the Pitbull Stadium naming deal went down.
One day we'll get there.
One day
we'll figure it out. David, I'm also going to share with you at least something that was true from my experience on the other side of the FOIA process. When I worked for the city of New York, I know this will be shocking that this was true of a government institution. Our document management system was a piece of shit. I feel comfortable saying this now because it's been a long time. I'm sure they've upgraded. I'm sure they don't even remember who.
Maybe I bet they haven't.
And a lot of times, one of the limitations when somebody would submit a request was that like it would be nigh impossible for me to figure out like it was incredibly cumbersome for me to sort of figure out like, how can I find this? How can I find it with confidence? I don't really, because if you're giving me a legitimate sort of submission, if it's not something about, you know, Mayor Bloomberg's meeting with space aliens, I would like to see if I can find something for you. I took the job seriously and I did want to figure it out, but I think there are times, and I don't know that this is true necessarily of college athletic departments, especially when we're like most of the time we're saying, find me emails, find me text messages, things like that. But for a lot of government institutions, especially the ones that have like old paper records that they still haven't digitized, there is some element of this that I think technology has not been effectively applied to make this a better process. And I suspect that's a lot of where the system grinds to a crawl or a halt. But here's the worst part. If you submit something and I'm like, I go to, you know, whatever the city search function was at that point, and I'm just totally hitting my head against the wall, I can't really write you, a journalist, an email back and be like, boy, David, I'd love to help you, but this shit sucks and I can't do anything about it.
You'd be surprised. You can. So to speak of a story we were sort of chasing after,
yes.
We were trying to track down if athletic departments were talking about AI photos of, you know, Brian Kelly rushing to Texas to save hurricane victims and yep. Ryan Day flying in helicopters to drop aid on Texas.
Yep.
And in doing so, I learned that a lot of systems can't actually search URLs. So if I was like, look for this URL, facebook.com, you know, Brian Kelly AI video. That's not the actual URL.
Sure.
They were coming back with like no hits. And I was saying, well, I know this is going on. I know this is talking about it. I've seen it in other emails. I can get other emails back where you see it. And they'd be, you know, I was on the phone with one officer and they were just like, oh yeah, like we can't actually search for URLs. Like you don't ever want to send us a URL to search because it'll come back with no results. I was like, well, why didn't you tell me that when I like first submitted this? Like we can't do a search for URLs, but you know, I guess, yeah, sometimes they can't say what they can and can't do. So there are all sorts of just minor headaches and hurdles you have to sort of fight through.
So part of why I wanted to talk to you today, well, this was not the original plan when we scheduled this interview, but in between scheduling it and recording it, Troy Moore got fired at Michigan over some extremely unpleasant, unprofessional, leading to criminal concerns. Some of the response to this story has been regular people, fans, getting mad at journalists and sort of saying, like, well, if you knew these rumors, you should have used FOIA to seek them out. You should have used the power of open records laws to confirm or deny rumors, to run a story. You shouldn't have waited until sort of like Michigan did all of its work for you, so to speak. I want to use that as a little bit of an example of like, how have you found that this process actually works in real life? What are the limitations of it? And what are sort of the like school or state specific challenges that make it sometimes harder than people might think to say, to take, here's a thing I've heard, here's a thing I've seen in the world, and now I'm trying to use FOIA specifically to get a better sense of whether it's true or not.
No. So as annoying as it is, I should say I support anyone getting mad at journalists. Like I, as a journalist, it's the only way we do better and work harder. So like, please do continue to yell at us. You know, the Michigan one is a really good example because people are like, well, if he was sexting his mistress, you know, that theoretically should be able to be gettable. And there is, it depends on how the law is written. It depends on the state. Like some states will say, you know, sure, we will give you as many records as possible. But if it's not related to the actual advancement of a university cause, which one FOIA officer told me they didn't think football was, and so they wouldn't give me like anything on it. they backed away from that after I was like, okay, calm down here, guys. This is, you're making the, this is, that's not true. You may not be able to get it. So like, is a head coach sexting someone work related? Like you can't FOIA, you know, if Ryan was going to get coffee with someone, like, hey, let's go meet, you know, at this coffee shop and get, what do you get at a coffee shop? Coffee. You know, like that is not a work thing. And I somewhat agree with that. Like, I do believe that, you know, federal civil servants who are typically doing their best and want to do good work, you know, in furtherance of a state cause are allowed a modicum of privacy. They're allowed sort of protections around deliberative causes. So like if you're brainstorming a new ad campaign for Michigan and you're like, you know, we should really have, I mean, the example I always use is like Hitler, but, you know, we should have Hitler be the face of Michigan football. That stuff can be protected because, you know, you should be allowed to sort of freely brainstorm and not get that stuff. So there are certain limitations and good FOIA officers know what to give and what not to give. So some of that stuff is protected. You know, in terms of getting text messages, from what I'd gathered, you know, an email search, like there's a server where emails are hosted and they can just type in a word and find it. It's not that easy. Text, some FOIA officers told me, they're like, I have to physically go to this coach and ask him to pull up his phone. A lot of times they'll have like the chief of staff do it, but like I have to go to the, I have to walk down the athletics department because I was asking for Brian Kelly's apology to a reporter after he snapped on them in week three. Mm-hmm. And it took like a month. They waited till after he was fired to give it to me, but they're like, you know, I have to tell Brian Kelly, and you know how coaches are, like, give me what's on your phone. And they're reticent to it despite the law being that way. So, you know, what could you find out from like that Michigan scandal that might've been there? You know, you could look if Drone Moore on his work calendar has a big like blocked off period that's like OnlyFans time. Like if that was out there, like that would be, you know, or if like reminders to like text, you know, certain people, like that would be out there.
Yeah. Reimbursement requests from the university for services.
Well, yeah. That's been done before.
Uh-huh.
You know, and someone did ask me recently, they were like, well, why don't you just ask? I think this was my dad. He's like, why don't you ask for all his texts? I'm like, well, you know, most people are smart enough to be sort of horny on their private phone. But if you're extremely horny, you may wind up using your work. Like, you're just like too horny to switch to your burner phone. So there's ways around it. Michigan's office is notoriously like slow, so we won't be seeing stuff from this for a while. But you know, if you had an inkling, you know, these reports and you had an inkling of an affair, there's somewhat ways to get around it. You know, the easiest thing would have just been to look at the salary information, which is public, where they saw that big bump and start, you know, going from there. But you know, I have been there's some coaches who I assume are just having affairs, and I have been trying to figure out ways to slice and dice this, just because that seems to happen at least once or twice a year where a coach gets busted for some sort of malevolent behavior, and I still struggle with that too. So there's it's very difficult, but yeah, you couldn't go to Michigan and just say, give me everything you have on Tyrone Moore and his myriad transgressions. You need to really slice and dice it,
right? And I think there's also risk of if you submit a FOIA request for something, if you say something like, hey, give me every text message between Sharon Moore and this third party. And if Michigan comes back to you and says, we have no responsive records, I think there is a potential danger in some stories of saying like, oh, well, that proves the negative in some way. Like, one of the tricky things, in my opinion, about FOIA is that it does tell you a lot about a story or the world that you're working on. But not everything is reflected in an official record. We know this from the way recruiting used to work with bagmen and things like that. Like, if you had submitted before NIL and before this was all sort of above board, if you had submitted a open records request to Alabama and said, like, hey, give me every record you have of booster payments to players, the response you would get after you work through all the reasons why they couldn't respond to it, this, that, and the other, would be, we have no responsive records. Because more likely than not, there wasn't anything in the Alabama files. I think people understood, like, we're not going to put this on paper. It's not going to be an email. It's not going to be in the university text message. These are things that happen through conversations. They happen, like, behind closed doors. And I think there is a danger sometimes to sort of saying, like, well, if a FOIA request came back with no responsive records, that must mean there's nothing there. And I think that's part of this that maybe the initial impulse is to think, go ask for the records and then you'll get them. The absence of them is not necessarily proof that, like, the thing you're working on isn't real or doesn't exist.
Yeah, and there are ways to go after third-party records too. So if an Alabama booster kept a ledger, you know, on paper somewhere in his office and you knew where that went, you could make the argument that, like, if you knew it existed, you could make the argument that that is related to university business. You can't use sort of private citizens as cutouts. People obviously do. So potentially, if you knew what it was, you could track it down. But they're not going to go to every single booster and be like, do you have a list of all the money you gave? So,
right.
And a lot of colleges do partner with a lot of third-party vendors. And that is just another headache of trying to, you know, give me this, give me that. But the beauty of that is a lot of third-party vendors don't know that all their communications are subject to FOIA requests. So, you know, they send stuff to schools and you're just like, oh, that's interesting.
The other thing that colleges have, this is not new, but I think it's a thing that's picking up speed. Colleges, you know, have started to sequester some of the athletic operations. I know Florida's done this for a long time, for example, into independent entities that are, I don't know how I would describe them exactly, but they're quasi-state. Like, in some ways, they are sort of not officially state-run. They are sort of run as, like, a little LLC on the side for fundraising purposes or for this, you know, this is where sort of, like, if your coach by state law can only make X money, this third foundation is the one that's actually paying the bulk of the salary. So in the contract, it's like, oh, he only makes $200,000. Oh, right. He's also making $5 million from the University Athletic Foundation or something like that. Has that been a roadblock or a barricade for you when you've been doing this kind of work where universities sort of try to use these related but separate entities to sort of say, like, oh, no, there's nothing in our university files and you can't ask over here because that's not a university institution?
Yeah, a little bit to that. Florida specifically, they carved out something in the law where their athletics departments are considered, they call them direct sports, direct support organizations, where they're just sort of generally exempt from FOIA. And if you ask nicely and specifically, like, a lot of schools will give you some things, like Florida State gave me bowl information, Florida State gave me emails. So it's not impossible. You know, in terms of that, I have been, I did a big story on UCLA doing basically tax fraud with donors using a cutout charity to send money there. And I was doing other requests on that. And an example is, like, the University of Connecticut. They have a lot of these athletic departments, their fundraising arms are private entities. And I was asking for records. And they said, well, no, this is a private entity. You can't have that. And I said, well, they're yes and no. Like, they are using, their emails are UConn.edu. I'm like, that is a state email. Whether these employees are, I don't care how they're classified, you know, give me that. So, like, the other thing is a lot of FOIA laws are all written to be interpreted liberally. You know, they all start out saying, you know, in the spirit of openness, the records are of the people. So FOIA officers are supposed to be proactively using this tool and not, they're supposed to be operating from a place of openness. Unfortunately, a lot of times you do need to get a lawyer involved to say, like, hey, you know, you should, you need to give me these records. And when a lawyer gets into the email, they're like, oh yeah, of course we're giving them records. We're just, you know, taking our time here, you know, we just had questions. So like there is some hurdles that you need to fight around. But yes, schools are doing that. You know, there's obviously all the like third party media rights, like something like, you know, Learfield, that like massive conglomerate. Mm-hmm. They handle all the marketing stuff. So like if, you know, Kirby Smarts, I don't know if Georgia has it. Georgia might be Learfield, maybe not. I should use an example that has Learfield, but whatever. You know, if like Kirby Smart is endorsing a fence company, like at the, you know, the highest fences in Athens, like they'll negotiate that on his behalf. And that sort of just gets totally siloed away. And you can still sort of try and suss it out. Cause yeah, I saw like Learfield was paying Ryan Day for some ad stuff. And it's like, there's ways to get it, but you know, you really need to be invested in the world and figuring it out. I'm still learning a lot, but a good, you know, way to go about FOIA is just try to be really specific on one topic, learn everything you can and go from it there instead of, again, yeah, give me everything you got on every single thing.
And because I suspect people are going to ask or going to wonder, FOIA, first of all, we should state from the beginning, FOIA applies to public institutions. So you're not going, you know, I live down the street from Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt is, by and large, I'm sure there are departments of Vanderbilt that connect to a state institution or whatever, but by and large, I can't submit a Freedom of Information request to the Vanderbilt Athletic Department and say, pursuant to state law, you have to do this. How does this work with conferences? Are there any sort of like FOIA opportunities or rights or any ingress at all to use FOIA to talk about like what conferences are doing at that level?
Yes, it is maddening. I personally believe every company should be subjected to this. You should be allowed to go to, you know, Facebook and say, give me all of Mark Zuckerberg's emails on everything. Like that, the law should just be that we have the right to. I'm, you know, obviously a very, you know, militant about this, but I'm a journalist. I believe in it. Like I wish it was available everywhere. In terms of conferences, you can get stuff from them. Typically, you can get email. You know, conferences have to communicate with universities. A couple weeks ago, I got, this was a year old, but I'm working on newer stuff, you know, all the ACC documents that they sent lobbying for the College Playoff Committee. You know, I had not known this at the time, but conferences are allowed to make presentations to committee liaisons to say, here's why the ACC is good. Here's why Miami is better than Alabama. Here's why Miami is better than, hopefully we'll find out, Notre Dame. And, you know, they will send this stuff to athletic directors, to coaches, and state employees are required by law to do their work on state emails, state phones. So like getting that stuff that way. But again, you have to know how to ask it. I was once feeling very lazy. It was like a Friday afternoon. And I was like, give me all your emails from the Big Ten about, it was like flag planting. And everyone was like, well, we can't search all Big Ten emails. We can't search all athletic departments. So you need to find ways to be very specific. You know, I got like the Big 12's emails. I need to do more of this about Dave Portnoy. Like, here's how we're going to present Dave Portnoy as sort of the face of the Big 12. Here's how we're going to liaise with Barstool Sports. So there are ways around it. You know, obviously the ACC is in the news and they are very aggressive emails. They're always sending out emailers. They're always sending out talking points, which you can sort of dig through and suss out. The SEC, we got, you know, when they relaunched their scheduling, maybe in late October, early November, you know, I got the ACC or the SEC's like behind the scenes PowerPoints, like here's how we justified this, here's the metrics, stuff like that. So there's ways to do it, but they're also like you have to go through the university and then go after it that way.
So let's talk about the subject that ostensibly we're here to talk about. Balloons. Very nice. How did you, and I should say, this is an audio podcast. We're going to be talking about a lot of different balloon displays. David, where can people find these balloon displays that we're going to be talking about?
If you head over to foiaball.com, our most recent post will be about how much universities are spending, specifically football teams, on just balloons. And they're spending tens and tens of thousands of dollars on balloons.
We will have a link to that in the show notes as well. And we'll put a link to it when we promote the show as it goes out. So let's just start with the top line number. Based on the schools that you asked for balloon records and the schools that gave you balloon records, who's spending the most on balloons this year?
Well, I hate to be cliched and say everything is bigger in Texas, but Texas is spending a lot of money on balloons. I was asking to try and sort it by football versus all athletics. Some schools said we could easily do that. Some didn't. You know, they all keep different spreadsheets of like, sure, all athletic spending or all football spending. And so I was just like, give me whatever is easiest. Last year, the University of Texas spent $170,000 on balloons alone. And I do want to note that that number is not the total. You know, they're sort of conducting searches different ways. They're not searching every single spreadsheet. There's stuff like, you know, if the university president is hosting a tailgate, I found stuff like that, like that expense would be on, you know, the university president's ledger and not the athletics department. So that's not even the full number, I don't think. But Texas A&M, 55,000, Texas Tech, also 55,000, just for these big, absurd installations that have like giant marquee letters with a weird slogan, like Texas A&M did their blackout last year against Mississippi State. And just in the athletics department, this giant marquee, it's just this blackout surrounded by black balloons. And that, you know, just for that, that's like $8,000 just for, you know, a 1 day installation.
I saw one Texas A&M setup. I think it was an outdoor setup where even through the use of, I think, like silver balloons, they give the appearance. It's the Texas A&M logo and it makes it look like the T is beveled.
You know, I saw the Texas A&M I was looking at this morning and they have like these chain balloons where they're like sort of, and I don't understand. I was trying to find out what slogan Texas A&M might have about chains and I couldn't find it. So if you know, please shoot me a message, but hopefully I'll find it out by the time this post publishes.
In the course of doing this investigation, did you glean any insight into like why balloons are such a thing and why schools are like, yeah, man, obviously we're going to spend five figures on balloons this year. Why would we not?
Part of it, I think, is just it's one of those things where if everyone's doing it, you have to do it. The other thing is these athletic departments are supposed to be revenue neutral. Mm-hmm. So they take in gobs of money, and to maintain their, you know, nonprofit status, they can't be hoarding tons of money. They need to spend it. You know, they get donations and schools are begging for your money. And really, they're just, you know, trying to find ways to spend it. They're going on balloons. I did try to speak with some balloon vendors, and this is no shade to them. They've found a very lucrative gig, and respect to that, but they did not want to talk about why. They did not want to jeopardize their contracts with schools by telling me, like, yeah, we think this is kind of silly, too. but, you know, I mean, balloons do look cool. Like, some of the installations are fun, and, like, the thing that's sort of fascinating about one of the expenses, or a lot of them are surrounded around recruiting weekend. So when kids come to official visits, they are greeted in the field house with a giant like LED marquee that has some sort of slogan. You know, if like Arkansas's this year was Embrace the Hog, which is, you know, maybe kids like that, but just it's sort of just to help. I think I had a line about bowl season. I did a piece on expenses on bowl season. And I think a lot of schools justify their importance through the use of like expensive pageantry. I think we can all know that about lots of, not just college football, but lots of businesses and lots of entities. And I think that's just kind of it. It's like, we are important, therefore we need balloons.
I also suspect, so obviously recruiting and athlete compensation and all that, a lot of that has changed, but I'm pretty sure a lot of the NCAA's rules about sort of like what can happen on an official visit, what you can spend money on, what you can't spend money on, like those still persist. I remember a couple years ago, we were still in the place where schools were getting like light punishments, sort of like lower tier NCAA sanctions, but sort of saying like, oh, okay, you can't do this sort of like, you know, you put the athlete's photo up on the school display and you're not allowed to do that. You have to, there's still a lot of rules. And I do kind of wonder if balloons fall into the safe zone of like, there's nothing in the NCAA rule book that says we can't do anything fun with balloons. So balloons are what we're going to do until the NCAA shuts us down.
Yeah. And a lot of the recruiting rules specifically have been relaxed. That's why I wanted to go after recruiting official visits, which is, you can also see on my website, foilball.com. If I get a plug in there, you know, the NCAA, like right now, the language is kind of reasonable. So is renting out a water park and a go-kart track and a bowling alley, like reasonable to entertain someone, you know, the NCAA doesn't necessarily want to like have that fight because it's silly, but I'm sort of happy to just sort of put it out there. You know, I found for like media days, schools are buying players suits because they're allowed to compensate them for their appearance at an event. And it's like, I have no issue with, you know, players getting money, players getting benefits. I'm just sort of like, let's show what's going on. And, you know, is buying someone a suit to appear at a media day reasonable? I don't know. You know, I think that's up for readers to decide. But I do find it fascinating that there just are all these expenses that, while the NCAA does audits, I don't think they're doing this kind of like really detailed line item stuff. Maybe they are, but it's also more of a headache to prosecute someone over really anything.
What was the... What was the inciting balloon display that sort of set you off on, I want to find out more about this world?
Actually, it was kind of a bit of a failure. I did that big recruiting official visit post, and I posted it on social media, and no one retweeted it. No one clicked it. You know, it happens. You throw things out into the ether. So the next day, I was trying to find a better social post. So I compared and contrasted like Minnesota's balloon spend to, I believe, Texas Tech's. You know, what $18,000 in balloons get you versus $5,000 does. And people just leapt on it. And I had all these other ones that I didn't even mention in the post going on. So I was just sort of posting them. And as I was, you know, getting them in, sharing them, and people were just jumping on it to the point where I said, okay, let's just find out. Let's find out all the balloons. Like, let's go, let's collect them all. Why not? You know? So I sent about, I think, 81 schools requests. And this post probably has records from about 40. So, you know, that's also a good example of like asking for something very specific. Uh-huh. I've asked for this about a month ago. As these have come in, you know, it's about like a 50% hit rate, which is pretty high, I think, because it was sort of a narrow thing. But people seem to want to see it. So, you know, if this post flops, that's on the readers. That's not on me.
Now it's on me, too, because we're talking about it on this podcast. So I
hope I don't tank your
viewership
numbers.
I will eat that shame privately, so you don't have to worry about that.
Fair enough. So I just want to see, and then there's also, you know, I'd forgotten about this, but there at the start of the season, Bill Belichick held his post TCU press conference under a balloon garland, which for some reason people were like, this is clearly Jordan Hudson's idea, and I was like, no, this has actually been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
But if you remember that garland that Bill Belichick sat under, that cost the school about $750.
Which, if you're looking at that picture and being like, what does UNC regret spending money on? The thing in that picture is probably not the balloons, at least. They got what they paid for with the balloons, so I feel better for them. Yeah,
And that's the other thing that's hard to sort of categorize, because, like, I think, just using Texas, I think $170,000 on balloons is ridiculous. Their operating athletic budget is, what, $120, $140 million?
Yeah,
like, these numbers are so absurdly skewed just because of the, like, wealth that's in college football that I'm like trying my best to be like, this is ridiculous. It's just sort of like the ridiculousness of it has become inveterate. And I think it should be important to just be like, no, maybe we shouldn't be doing this.
Sure. I mean, if we're going to live in a world where the NCAA is going to be like, or the SEC is going to be like, hey, here's an advertisement for the SCORE Act and women's sports are in trouble, this, that, and the other. I think it is worth at least sort of saying like, okay, but how tightly are we looking at our like, would we rather spend $150,000 on balloons, or would we rather put that money into women's track and field or volleyball or this, that, and the other?
And in terms of, I did get one in terms of like how that spending breaks down. I believe it was the University of Illinois. They spent $16,000 on balloons for the football team, and every other athletic program, men's basketball, track and field, women's basketball, baseball, softball, that whole other total was $10,000. So I think, okay, you know, it's pretty indicative of where the money is, where the money's coming in, where it's going. But yeah, they're not giving other sports the kind of balloon
largesse
that the football team is getting.
Now I want to know if there's a Title IX issue that's specific to balloons, but we're not going to get into that here.
But we can figure that out. Yeah. Like, any Title IX investigations regarding balloon spending, it might, you never know
what
might exist out there.
Yeah. What, to the extent you feel comfortable, what school was most difficult to deal with, or what was a particularly difficult school to deal with when you just wanted to, like,
balloons
spending?
Most were pretty basic. You know, over the course of doing this, I found sort of an interesting thing that I was expecting a lot of, like, Northern liberal institutions to be like, we love FOIA, here are our records. They're much more reticent compared to Southern schools, where, like, I did not expect LSU to have a fantastic public records department that just hands things over, you know? And my working theory is that, like, Southern schools just sort of hate the government. So they're like, yeah, sure, here, have this. Like, you know, we love our football team, but, like, you know, we're like, liberals love FOIA until it's used in practice. Whereas Southern schools are like, yeah, you know, the government shouldn't be doing this. So here it is. Even if they do, you know, even if they're big Tigers fans. So it's, was kind of an interesting assertion, but I should note, like, I can complain about stuff. All the people who do handle public records requests, they're just very good civil servants who are trying to do their job. You know, sometimes what I've heard is that university presidents can come in and say, look, we want to be open, we'll give everything out. Others can say, like, look, we don't mind a lawsuit, like, it's not going to be bad press, like, you know, be restrictive. So some of it does depend on like the top down pressures that they get, but all the people who are fulfilling these requests are just very nice, very sweet civil servants who deserve our support and respect.
There is also, and I will say this is, again, as a person who used to do this, there is an element, and you can't control this, of like, how is that person doing on the day you submitted this request? Had they just, because most, I would say most of the time, and maybe this isn't true at some bigger governmental institutions, but I think it was like my job when I worked at DOI, my whole job wasn't FOIA response. It was one small thing that I did. So if I had a day where I had just had an interview with a witness that had gone badly, or we had just lost a motion in court, or my boss had gotten mad about me, or this, or that, and then your FOIA request comes across my desk, and I think it's
balloons.
Yeah. And I'm like, this is some stupid, here comes David sending me some more stupid bullshit. Whether I want to or not, that probably impacts how I respond to it. I don't know if it necessarily like impacts like what I ultimately do, but the speed in which I treat it, the sort of like initial search that I do, it like there is sort of a weirdly human aspect to all of this that I kind of wonder, like, do you feel like in the course of doing this, is there anything like rapport you start to develop with different departments? And they're sort of like, okay, we know David, we know what he's doing. And so we can sort of work with him in a way where it's not just like, who's this weird stranger who's asking us about balloons?
I think so. I try to be respectful of like, I also don't have like a strong legal budget, but if I'm asking for something ridiculous and they say no, I'm just like, look, let's cut this one. I was talking to a FOIA officer at the University of Nebraska just yesterday. And she was like, look, we buy helium tanks, but I don't know what helium was used by football and what helium was used by, like, I can't sort the numbers.
Because they do all the in-game balloons at Nebraska. So I'm sure there's a big helium budget.
And I was like, ma'am, I'm going on a podcast tomorrow. You don't need to be up like late at night sorting, like trying to like calculate helium things. So I think you can, if you treat these people, you know, nicely and with respect, you can get it. They do mention just sort of how many cranks they deal with. So like, and yes, they're supposed to get one in. They're supposed to process it in order, but you like imagine your workday and someone just comes in and throws a bunch of work on your desk that, you know, doesn't even work for you. Don't, you know, you don't know who they are. Like you are in a way their job is to do that, but you are causing headaches. So I try to be as minimally difficult as possible, though I've still, you know, I'm sure ruffled a few feathers.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't be doing journalism if you weren't difficult in some way, shape or form.
And like a lot of this, the FOIA officers are great, but then they have to go to the athletics department. So I have heard that some athletics departments are annoyed about that extra work, but that's, you know, again, that's also their job.
What surprised you most in the course of investigating balloon expenditures?
That is an interesting, though, you know, I think it was also very indicative of the haves and have nots. Your big schools are spending lots of money. Your little schools are not. Your smaller ones are getting smaller. You know, just how, again, like difficult these systems are to navigate. You know, I was like, look, search for vendors with balloon in the name, search for items around entertainment. And they're like, you know, we can't do these kinds of searches. We don't have, you should have a like a expense code for balloons, seeing as how much you're spending on, but like they don't track that. And then a lot of just how much stuff isn't maybe logged in the way you would think about it. Like there can expenses can be filed, you know, every this, that way and the other. The other thing actually that surprised me was sort of the sameness of all. Everyone has these big marquee letters that have a team slogan. Everyone has, you know, the like sparkle balloons with the silver and the points, and they just all the school colors. So I'm like, why is everyone doing the same thing? You know, like I don't want to say like, say like a small school should like money ball balloons and find like different installations and like cheaper things. But like, you know, you go on an official visit, you go to three schools and they've all got this exact same like setup on the field house. Are you going to be motivated by like the better slogan there? Like, you know, are the balloons more full? Like, it's just kind of like, there's so much, I think, keeping up with the Joneses in college football that like, I think they're just doing this because they have to.
Instagram trend where they're like, well, I saw 8 other schools set up their balloons like this. So that's what we should do. That's what's cool.
I was talking to a FOIA officer who said like, look, you know, this is interesting. And you probably can't get it, but you should see what sororities are spending. Like, you know, there's no way for me to FOIA like all those like sorority spends on balloons, but it's such a big thing there too. So I think, I don't know, also college kids are young, you know, impressionable. Like they just like big, silly, dumb things. I still do. I think it's very funny. Like Colorado had a giant balloon Ralphie. Texas had a giant balloon Bevo. It's adorable. I still like it. So
look, we sit down every Thanksgiving morning in my house and watch the Macy's parade. And that's just expensive ass balloons ultimately is what those are.
Just giving me some ideas. I'm sure that there's some, well, Macy's probably pays for most of it, but there's definitely some liaison with the city about, you know, all that stuff. So
that's right. That's right.
Maybe I'll email you later today and ask for
contracts
with Macy's.
All right. I'm going to get us out of here. First of all, thank you, David, for joining us today. Everybody should check out your work at Foiaball, FOIABALL.com. Support David's work and become a paid member over there. I'm sure we'll have David on to talk about. I can say, quietly, since nobody can FOIA this podcast, we're working with David on some other projects, some projects that have a little more maybe journalistic oomph than Let's Talk About Balloonist. It's not that I'm not having a fun time with this one.
No, but this has been really fun building my own thing where it's like I can do a big dive into. I did a piece a couple weeks ago about DHS surveillance tools at college football games, and I have balloons. So I can say FOIA Ball has the range, but I like big investigative journalism, and I like big stupid journalism, so like I'm trying to do both here.
So I'm gonna get you out of here on a question that I haven't prepped you for, and so it's cold, and so I'll take whatever answer you give. Is there anything you have in the works that maybe you're still waiting on things to come back that you feel comfortable sort of teasing for, like, hey, but you know, sign up for FOIA Ball today and in the future possibly you're gonna get X down the road?
Oh yeah, that's a fantastic question. I have a giant spreadsheet with all sorts of things. What story am I working on right now? I can't answer that because I have like 17 different things going on. Some fun things that I do have coming down the pipeline, actually. I got a lot of the search terms that universities use to monitor social media. So like, you know, what people are tweeting, what they want to like see, like all the notifications they get for that. In the future, I have one on like all the drugs they're allowed to give college students on the sidelines. You know, like I think a paper in Colorado, maybe the Denver Post 10 years ago, did a big thing on like tramadol being given to students. So I have a lot of that. A lot of interesting things about like all these character coaches. We did an investigation into Bryant Gant's relationship with the Athens police a few months back, and I have some follow up stuff on that. A lot more surveillance tech. We're working on stuff like that. A ton more UNC stuff. We have a lot of interesting things coming up regarding Jordan Hudson and Bill Belichick. So there's sort of no shortage of things we're going. And unfortunately, just the second idea pops into my head, I like fire it out and then I forget about it until it comes in my email. So, those are some big things that are going on. And, you know, what I'd say is we're small and growing. So I'm still learning a lot more about this system. So I do believe the work's going to get better and bigger. So sign up now and get in on the ground floor.
That's right. It has our heartiest recommendation here at Phantom Island. David, thanks again for jumping on, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
Phantom Island is produced by Michael Serber. Our theme song is also called Phantom Island from the album of the same name by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. Thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.